Let the record reflect, the time is 5:10.
Hello?
Stay away from me.
The National.
Are you ready?
You're evil.
I'm not Knievel, though.
The time is 5:10. The day is Monday, March 20th, 2006. President is Representative Lynn Crawford, Coghill, and myself, Chair Newman. Today we're not going to be taking up any legislation, but instead going to hear from Chairman of the Board from Kubota, Mayor George Wirch. He's also invited Henry Springer, who's an engineer on this project. We've invited Mayor Wirch here today to give us a presentation on the economic value of the Kinnickarm Crossing. It's a view that, as a former mayor of the municipality of Anchorage, he's spent a good deal of time now on this issue of a crossing. We felt he'd be uniquely qualified to discuss this angle. It's a great time for Alaska and its economic development, and this committee can help facilitate in that discussion. Also, we, for the record, we have Representative Dahlstrom online. Mayor Wirch and...
And we have two, Chairman, two representatives.
We will invite them up in just a minute. Mayor Wirch and Henry, come on up for the Springer. We also have Representative Stoltz and Representative Gardner, come on up if you'd like to and join us.
For the record, I'm George Wirch, Chairman of the Board of the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority. I'm accompanied by the Toll Authority's Executive Director, Mr. Henry Springer, who in his own right has had a distinguished career in Alaska, a full career with the Department of Transportation as a road and bridge builder all over the state, nearly a decade with the Alaska General Contractors as their executive director, and ladies and gentlemen, he also had the distinction of serving in the House of Representatives here for the state of Alaska, and one of your colleagues a few years ago. What I'd like to do today is quickly kind of go through a few slides here on this PowerPoint. Talk a little bit about what the Toll Authority is, what it's trying to do, talk a little bit about what the impacts and expectations are for the Kinnickarm Bridge Anchorage to the Mat-Su Borough, and then perhaps discuss where we are financially with starting with our cost estimate and how we're going to raise the necessary money to build this project. Here is the charter that was included in the statute that you all passed in the spring of 2003, Kubota created to advance the economic welfare of the state and further the public transportation system in the vicinity of the Upper Cook Inlet by constructing a bridge from Anchorage to the Mat-Su Borough. And that is exactly what we're doing, and the emphasis today is an analysis and a discussion of the economic welfare issues and the developmental issues that will be derived as a consequence of this project. Let's take just a minute to look at a map of the greater area. You can see here Turnagain Arm at the very south end of this map picture, with the little town of Hope on the far side, and then moving north about 40 miles where you get up past Willow in the Parks Highway corridor. Clearly Palmer, town of Sutton to the northeast, Wasilla kind of, and Big Lake right in the center. The location for the Kinnickarm Crossing is just slightly upstream, about a mile and a half upstream of the narrowest choke point of this nearly 30-mile long body of water called Kinnick Arm. The water at that location is fairly shallow, about 30 to 60 feet in its deepest point. And that's where we propose to build the bridge. This is a picture taken just a few days ago of the inbound traffic at Boniface Interchange on the Glen Highway. And I show it because this picture is today already congested. But the point is, with the construction of a Kinnickarm Crossing, the potential exists to handle substantially more traffic on an alternative route that would lighten the impacts of future population on the Glen Highway. And as we might see later, reducing the demand for highway funds for public infrastructure, and substituting instead a toll road. Go ahead.
Mayor Wirch, can you, and I just want to remind other members of the committee too, just to feel free to ask questions. We're going to relax the committee rules a little bit today. Can you give us an idea of what the extended timeline is for the Glen Highway, is congestion going to be building up?
Well, this highway handles today about 50,000 vehicles a day. It's increasing annually. The road will be maxed out within 10 years, and then we face the prospects of adding lanes. The trouble with the Glen Highway, to add lanes, you're talking about adding traffic lanes that go from Anchorage all the way out to the intersection of the parks and the Glen Highway going to Palmer and Wasilla. That's about 40 miles, and you got to add a lane in each direction. So you got to build about 80 lane miles of road. Estimates for that run up to in the neighborhood of $300 million. And what do you have? You still have the same corridor. You don't have alternatives. And all that money, on the present scheme of things, would have to be public money. There is a potential to do tolling of new lanes. That's an evolving technology in the lower 48, where the Federal Highway Administration and Congress now have authorized the additional lanes to be toll lanes. Some wit said, well, those are properly Lexus lanes, because if you can afford the toll, you can probably drive by yourself. If not, you have to have a carpool. But be that as it may, that is an unknown for Alaska, whether the state would go so far as to add traffic lanes that would be tolled. Our project, of course, is a toll, and we see the opportunity to meet this future growth population thing. The left slide here is the last years, from 1980 to 2003, the population, and the light blue is Anchorage, and the heavier magenta color is the Matsu. You can see the Matsu is growing much more rapidly than Anchorage. Taking that growth curve, the ICER of the University of Alaska has estimated these figures, yellow now being Anchorage and blue being the borough. 2030 is the construction horizon for the bridge. What do we mean by that? It means that the Federal Highway Administration requires us to build a capacity that will be sufficient for 25 years. And so we just look at opening the bridge sometime around 2010 and being complete with 20 years behind us by 2030. That's about 550,000 people when you combine the two. And that's what this slide shows. On the right, with the bridge, without a bridge, the population of Anchorage still grows. It grows a little less with the bridge because more people will choose to go to the Matsu side, and that's why on this bar chart that Matsu component is bigger than without a bridge. I think it's a point worth pausing on, though, that this population growth is expected to happen whether we build a bridge or not. So the question is, what is the quality of life in the valley and in Anchorage by not building the bridge? What are the traffic congestion problems, the air quality congestion problems of pushing all that traffic and all this population through a 40-mile-long corridor as we do today, or is it time to look at an alternative?
Mayor Wirch, is the former mayor of Anchorage, can you give us an approximate estimate on how much area is available for further expansion?
It certainly can, and that ties into the next slide. Thank you. We've looked at land use. In Anchorage, there's about 7,000 acres of undeveloped land. I've talked to some real estate folks who are currently doing a study, and their preliminary finding is the problem with Anchorage, 6,000 of those 7,000 acres are on the hillside without water and sewer, so you have to build on one-acre lots to drill your own well and have your own septic system. So that means Anchorage really doesn't have much of a building capacity left. On the Matsu side, privately owned land today, 77,000 compared to 7,000, and most of that land's buildable. There are 9,000 private owners that have that 77,000 acres. In addition, the borough owns 10,000 in what they call the Port District. So all told, there's a substantial amount of land for commercial, industrial, and residential, and even recreational uses that's on the other side. 11 times what you have in Anchorage, and many more times that in the way of family units. This slide is the number of houses that are built each year. This number is about 500. That number for the Anchorage Bowl is about 1,400. And out there in the valley, about 1,100. So that's about 2,500 houses a year. It varies a little bit in the last couple of years. But the expectation is that construction is going to continue. Why? Because the population is going to continue to grow. We expect, of that 2,500 homes that are built each year, very quickly with the construction of a bridge, the opening of a bridge, you'll see more and more of those houses built in the Point McKenzie area. I want to take just a minute to make sure we all are on the same sheet of paper as far as what the structure is likely to be. It's true that it's not been designed, but we certainly have conceptual designs. You'll notice it's not a suspension bridge or one of these glamorous cable stay bridges, and the reason for that is because we have too many airplanes flying over there. We have Elmendorf's airstrip. We have the Merrill Field north-south runway. We had Ted Stevens' north-south runway, all of which kind of converge over a Kinnick arm, and pilots on a stormy night don't want to have to deal with the 400-foot towers of a suspension bridge. So way back in the very beginning, we said that's out. And in 1984, when they did the first environmental impact statement of crossing Kinnick Arm, that was the same finding then. And it's just the air traffic's got even more. So we're talking about a traditional piling-supported bridge. If you use concrete, it looks a little more glamorous. If it's steel, it looks more traditional in the way of steel pilings that are driven into the substrata. Incidentally, we have done some underwater boring there, and borings are proven to be a very substantial material. It's not bedrock, but you don't have to have bedrock to build a bridge pier.
And then, Mayor Wirtz, Henry, could you speak a little bit? I know in earlier discussions there's been questions about earthquakes, shear, how that would affect the bridge. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, from a engineering standpoint, Chairman said we're not in the design stage yet, but we had to set the perimeter under the environmental impact statement process to see what the real challenges are. Contrary to a lot of people thinking that ice or tides or silt or anything may be a real challenge, by far the most influential factor is seismic design. And our earthquakes, we have actually a lot of data. We have more data than most areas because ever since the big one, we have monitored seismic activities right in the Anchorage Bowl through the Geophysical Institute in Fairbanks. And our earthquakes are different than, for example, California or most Japanese earthquakes. And the reason is that our faults are not horizontal plate shifts. They're somewhat skewed. So We have put a symposium together of most of the North American experts to give us some guidance and opinion, and we have developed a formula which is going to be incorporated in the design standards. No matter what design we're going to come up with, if it's concrete or steel, that has to be met. So seismic is the key question, and it's absolutely doable. We had about 18 people there, and there was uniform agreement that it can be done at a cost. We've got to put more steel into it, basically. That's the solution to it. But the way it's going to come about, probably that's going to be the stoutest thing around Anchorage. If we got a real bad one, Anchorage is going to be gone, and you probably still can bicycle across the bridge. So that's what we're aiming for.
On the screen right now, you have an artist's rendition. You can do wonders with computers nowadays. We took a picture of Kinnick Arm and turned it over to a youngster, and he drew in a bridge for us. But you notice this bridge on the shallower shoal waters, it's a gravel approach causeway, and there's about 8,000 feet plus of structure. Those pilings are about 300 feet apart, as shown in that earlier slide. A pretty traditional kind of structure.
Now, Mayor Wirtz, Representative Lynn had a question.
Yes, thank you. What is the difference in cost and ease of building, which I guess translates into cost, between the concrete and the steel? You know, would it take the same period of time to build either one? It runs significantly. But what are the pros and cons of these two types of bridges? What's the trade-off?
We'll ask Mr. Springer, the bridge builder, to respond here.
Well, $10,000 question is, what are the Chinese going to do with the steel in a few years? So I'm not putting that in as a qualifier. That's just an economic fact in the world situation. But interesting enough, our cost factors between different concrete designs and steel designs are probably pretty close the same. And the reason for it is, in order to make it earthquake compatible or proof, we got to put so much steel in the concrete that there, in the reality, isn't all that much difference. So the costs are pretty comparable. I think what the difference is going to be is manufacturing, where you're going to manufacture, shipping costs, and things like that together.
And the speed of construction would be about the same?
Well, we figure about three and a half years. If the concrete components would be made locally, we would need some more lead time. But otherwise, if they are manufactured someplace else, same time.
Thank you.
I'd like to take just was there another question from the body? Okay. I'd like to take a question now take up the issue of travel time, distance, and what it means to commuters. What we have here is a computer run, assuming the bridge is built, and coming into downtown, or midtown actually was the terminus here, the Safeway Mall, the Sears Mall in midtown. This is the agricultural land. There's some neighborhoods in the vicinity where the bars change color. And so they ran this little computer run. And if you have to drive around, it's about 80 minutes savings or 68 miles difference. Some of those houses are going to be further up into this area. In fact, some are already over here at the golf course at Settlers Bay. But just taking this area as the prospective build-out area, you can see that that's a substantial commuter's saving. 68 mile saving, let's just round it off at 60. If you've got a car that gets 20 miles a gallon, that's 3 gallons of gas. At today's price, that's about $7.50. I bring that point out because that is probably kind of the upper limit of what the toll could be. People perceive not the true cost of running their car, but just how much gas they have to put in it. And if they got to put in $7.50 worth of gas, that's the cost of crossing a bridge. So we see the upper limit of tolls at being about $7.50. The lower limit, based on a study we had done by an outside consultant last year, this would probably be $3. So my guess is that now that we're looking for more private investment and less public money, we're looking at a little higher toll than $3. But clearly the consultants in the financial community understand the reality that you cannot charge a price that's higher than the alternative, or people will just pass you up and go to the alternative. So that's kind of where we are, Mr. Newman.
Mayor Wirtz, could you kind of show an outline if the road was to extend to about mile 73 just north of Willow? That would actually be, you know, that's all my district up into there. It would be my preferred route to see a new north-south extension, a new corridor. There is, it's all platted out, I believe, that goes up in through there. To have a new road that goes around Wasilla, it takes into consideration one of the most dangerous roads in the state between Wasilla and Big Lake.
Well, Chairman Newman, thank you for the question, because that's what this line is. It's a generated line from the Matsu Borough study a few years ago that says, in a perfect world, if we had money, how would we get from this end to the highway going north? And that is this road here. It's about 35 miles, give or take, that would be a new corridor. A corridor that would be an excellent alternative for the Alaska Railroad so that they could come out of their port with their cargo already loaded direct from the ship in the rail spurs that Governor Sheffield and the railroad have built just in the last year. Take that traffic across a railroad bridge, across this corridor, and up here. If you're going to build a rail corridor, you have the potential to put a highway corridor alongside, a potential for new power and gas lines and utilities. And this whole concept, if you look at this difference, here's two sides of a triangle, here's one direction, you're going to save probably 50-plus miles in the run to Fairbanks. If you're driving an 18-wheeler, rule of thumb is it's about $2 a mile. If you can save $50 in this place right here, that's just going. That's $100 going. That truck's got to come back. If it doesn't carry cargo, then your load has to pay the return trip deadheading, and that's $200. So $100 each way. So I think the implications for freight service to the interior are measurable. I would also comment, and then I'll take the next question, because you can see the benefit for recreational users or folks who just want to come go north to see the mountain or go to the interior and Fairbanks and visit, or vice versa, come from Fairbanks into Anchorage for any extra shopping. So, yes, ma'am.
I'm interested in the railroad, and I understand that there are technical reasons to not have the bridge that you're talking about mm-hmm. also accommodate railroad traffic. If your bridge were to be built first and the railroad built a bridge afterwards, would there be a cost savings for their bridge, given you've already done all the studies and the have some track record?
Well, we think there not only is a cost saving in processing the environmental statements and the permits, because we've already gone through that routine. It would be just an amendment, a supplement. But more importantly, the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority is committed to building a highway bridge and those gravel causeways that you saw in that artist rendition that are railroad compatible. I mean by that, you all know that trains can't turn sharp corners. Cars can and trucks can, but trains can't. So we will design the road approaches and any elevation changes necessary to get up to the bridge and across and up the hill on the other side to railroad grade standards. So what we would see as a possibility, of course, it's clearly up to the railroad how they want to build their bridge, but we'd be very amenable to them putting their pile driver right on the highway bridge, swing it over the side, and drive the piles for railroad bridge, and just move right on out and get it done in a much shorter time at a much less cost. It's troublesome to drive piles in Cook Inlet. You either have to have a very specialized jack-up rig that's stable, or you fight a barge that moves around in that current, and sometimes you lose your pile. So we think that we have a lot to offer. Secondly, we're talking actively with the railroad leadership about when we lay the gravel for the roadbed for the highway, can we work out an arrangement to lay the gravel for the roadbed for the railroad at the same time, leaving only the structure to be done in years later? The biggest thing for the railroad is clearing that right-of-way for permits and acquiring that right-of-way for 35 miles or so. And that, in my opinion, will probably take, give or take, 5 years. It's virgin undisturbed land, and you all know how hard it is to get permits to push out across new areas.
But I'd like to add into that equation too, is the railroad is also considering upgrades that it's going to have to do to that road from Anchorage to get around through Wasilla at the cost of approximately $150 to $200 million.
Yeah.
Now if they're running a heavy gauge rail that they can carry all the freight that's going up to our new gas pipeline that we're going to get, I hope. You know, that can just be used for commuter traffic down and through Anchorage. It will take away a lot of that cost of trying to upgrade that traffic, that rail, and they can put a lot of that money. They're also looking at another way around Wasilla, and anybody who's drove through Wasilla knows the congestion. It looks just like that picture that you had earlier, the Glen Highway. But I've been through all that property there quite a bit, snowmobiling and hunting, and that's some mm-hmm. great property for development. It's a nice forest in there, and it's ready to go.
Before we leave this slide, I'd like to point out that there's a connection here called the Burma Road from the south end of Big Lake down to this intersection with the Goose Bay Road. That's really just a ATV trail, or a little better right now. The governor has in his budget the money to start the EIS for that road, which would probably take a year or two, and then try to find the money to upgrade that into highway standards. If that were done, northbound traffic in very few number of years could come this direction, follow the Big Lake Road to the Big Lake intersection, then head north. So even though it's not quite as good as the future road, it is still a savings of probably 30 miles or so. So it would be a very beneficial addition.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
President Crawford.
Two or three years ago, I heard some talk and saw in the newspaper where they were talking about putting an interim ferry in there to start getting people used to crossing there and mm-hmm. getting more people living on that side. what's happened to that idea?
The Matsubara has done some great work in working with the Navy Research, U.S. Navy Research and Development Center. And the Navy is designing and fabricating or building a ferry that has some special attributes that are good for this kind of water as an experiment to see if it can be used for landing military troops across hostile shores. That ferry is due to be in service in 2007, is my last understanding. And quite honestly, we think that's a good thing because that not only will get people in, exposed to commuting that direction, but that's a way to get our workers back and forth. So whether they're coming from the Valley workforce or whether they're coming from Anchorage, we can get them working on the bridge from both ends by having that ferry in place. So that's good news.
And I'd like to add on to that, too. There's industry is already moving over to the Port McKenzie side with anticipation of that. Vico has opened a plant there that almost $6 million they spent last year hiring most of the electricians and welders that are doing the new modulars that are going up to Prudhoe so they don't have to take them down through the Parks Highway. But industry is already looking forward to that. The ferry will be able to handle semis, and so they can get traffic in and through there, so a lot of industry can start moving that way and create a huge amount of economic development that way, too.
During the development of the environmental impact statement, Kubota, at the direction of Federal Highways, has done a land use and transportation forecast. I have an advanced copy of this, and from this I have a transparency on the screen that looks at the development suitability of land using a variety of sources. We convened an economic working group that had about a dozen and a half people on it. Planners from the municipality in the Matsu, from the federal state highway department, and some private sector folks, university folks, and they went out and interviewed no less than 50 business executives and government officials in the North Cook Inlet area. And a part of their findings, and we'll come back to more of them in a minute, is what is the land situation and what's likely to be suitable for development and where is the most growth going to be. This chart, this color shows that there's going to be little opportunity because this is a refuge. This is a game refuge. This is a wild bird refuge. This is a refuge. And so this color, brown, or I guess it was supposed to be red, are areas where there'll really be no development because they're all set aside as reserve. The dark green, it's supposed to be dark green, didn't come through on this projector very well, but this is where they see the most of the development. This triangle area from Wasilla on the east all the way past Big Lake up to the Nancy Lakes area without getting into that refuge up there. And this is the growth area for economic development. I gave you some acreages for residential uses a minute ago, and of course you can see this green is massive land holdings. I wanted to talk about the highway that is called the Port McKenzie Road. This is in red here, and the red indicates that when you run the future traffic tests, traffic volumes for 2030, the two-lane road doesn't make it. So then we substituted the new corridor road and says, if you have that, does this road still fail in red? And that's what's on the screen. Yes, it does. So clearly, the Point McKenzie Road has to be four-laned, and then you get back to blue, which is satisfactory traffic flows. There is, if you don't build the future bypass all the way to Willow, then even if you four-lane the Point McKenzie Road and build the connector to Big Lake, this little piece of road on the Parks Highway is red. That means it's in failure, and that's where you're going to have the accidents where the road is under-designed for its capacity. So this computer program is something Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority financed. It took the municipality's computer program and the Matsu Borough's computer program, and wouldn't you know it, they're two different platforms, so they didn't talk to one another. But we build a new one, and it integrates that. And all those organizations are now using and applying that model and looking at regional transportation planning. Matsu Borough, Municipality of Anchorage, State DOT, and Federal Highway Administration. So we're very pleased to have contributed that and shared it with all the other authorities.
Mayor Wirtz, where is that red line at? Where is that located?
Well, it'll be back here in a minute. This is the Parks Highway through Wasilla, And it looks to me like that's just beyond the Big Lake intersection. I think that's the Big Lake intersection on this projection. It's kind of hard to see.
Big Lake in Houston?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes, sir. That's right.
Okay. That'd be King Arthur Road.
Question. This may not be the place to ask, but we're talking about the roads on the other side, the north side of Kinnick Arm. Has it been settled now that the Anchorage connection will be through Government Hill? Are we still talking any possibility going through the base? And did I hear you say earlier that the on-ramp area is going to be around the Sears Mall?
Mr. Lynn, Representative Lynn, no, the time and distance studies they found with polling that most of the traffic is destination traffic, either going to work downtown or going to the hospital or going to work in Midtown. And so for convenience, just to pick an anchor point, they picked the Sears Mall as Midtown as a place to compare from.
I see.
That's all that was a computer destination.
Your time and distance.
Right. Now, to your main question is, what is the approach on the Anchorage side? No, it's not decided. Federal Highway has yet to issue that draft environmental impact statement. They did issue their scoping report in November, which said there's two feasible ways, and both of those are by tunneling under Government Hill, one under Erickson Street, one under Deegan Street. Both would initially use the C Street Viaduct because it has capacity that can be added, that's available. The Gamble-Ingra connection right now is already exceeding capacity, so without major upgrades, you don't want to put any new traffic there. But at some year, typically between 2020 and 2025, it appears that we'll have to build another crossing of Ship Creek with another viaduct or another bridge, which would tie into Gamble-Ingra if the city is successful in building the highway-to-highway connection, which is a subsurface or subgrade that connects the Glen to the New Seward by separating it from street traffic and dropping it into a trench. That's a $800 million project, so we'll see what's out there in the future. But we're happy to tie into that when the time comes.
And we don't know yet, if I may. When we're going to get the answer, whether it's going through Government Hill or through the Bay, I guess that's anybody's guess.
My guess is that this late summer or early fall, Federal Highway will actually issue the final decision, the record of decision. In the meantime, we're hopeful that within the next few weeks, this is the 20th, possibly within the next 2 weeks, Federal Highways will release the draft EIS. Is that right, Mr. Springer? So a little more than 2 weeks. And that draft, of course, goes to public comment, agency review, and that process will carry well into the spring. There'll be many more public hearings on that, the same standard that we used in preparing it. We go out and talk to all the constituents and the organizations that have an interest. It'll take all summer, in my opinion, for Federal Highways to digest that and get to the point where they render their final decision, the record of decision. And
the cost factors would be about the same. I know there's some talk about the military on the move thing.
Well, there's no proposal now on the table to go through the military base. Okay. And I think you can understand why we don't want to disrupt the military bases. That's a major, major contributor to Alaska.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Wirtz and Mr. Springer, for your presentation. I just wanted to comment to Representative Lynn that there have been extensive discussions, you know, previously with the military, and what was, you know, stated is very correct, that there isn't any proposals right now to go through either of the bases, although the folks on the base and on both bases and in Washington, D.C. continue to be very involved in what is, you know, going on and how this will affect them as they will need to be able to transport their vehicles, specifically the Strikers, to, you know, the port. So either way, they'll be involved in it. But my district being very diverse and having a little bit of Muldoon and a little bit of Government Hill and the two complete bases out to Eagle River, obviously each specific community has some you know, very specific concerns about it, but I appreciate the thoroughness that you're putting into the project.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you.
I wanted to now pick up some of the foreseeable events that our economic committee, this working group that consisted of so many people within the community, both of Anchorage and Amatsu, that have a vision for the future, either because they operate a business, ongoing business, or because they have government responsibilities as an elected official or appointed official. And here's some of the foreseeable events that they think are practical between now and 2030. Railroad spur, we talked about that already. Industrial developments in both ports and the addition of cruise ship traffic into Cook Inlet. Some of that's already started, but Governor Sheffield, the Port of Anchorage, clearly is in negotiations, or discussions, not negotiations, with many others who would like to come into Cook Inlet, but right now the depth of the water at the dockhead is not deep enough. A new electrical power plant, 200 megawatts of power, a gas liquids spur line to the Matsu, and the water line, you know, the municipal's water system that comes out of Lake Eklutna. The last time I left the mayor's office, we had a 40 million gallon a day surplus that could be piped across a bridge to serve the new housing areas in the Matsu area in Point McKenzie area. The ferry we talked about, yes, question.
Is there a shortage of water for the development of Matsu?
There's no water system in Point McKenzie at all yet. They're all wells. But in Anchorage, we have a marvelous water system. And if you recognize that the capacity of Anchorage to absorb more households is somewhat limited by the land, we still have a surplus of water, excellent water, I might add. It was the best-tasting municipal water system in the United States about 6 or 7 years ago. So we're very proud of that. We talked about the ferry already. The commuter rail is an issue I can't speak to, but this group felt that needed to be included, so it is here. The Willow Connector we addressed. The Wasilla Bypass for the railroad is... If you build the Willow Connector, it looks like it's almost a trade-off. You don't need to do the bypass if you build the Willow Connector. So we'll let the railroad and the community resolve that. Hatcher Pass Skier, you think that's likely to happen in this 20-year plan? New and increased military presence, a small airplane base on the far side, and more connectivity. And to this, I would also add the redundancy for emergency egress and access in case something bad happened. What is not envisioned is building a new airport in Point McKenzie. They do not envision moving the state capitol, and they do not envision a bridge over the Susitna River other than the bridges that are already there, the railroad bridge and the highway bridge. If there's any comment or question about some of these forecastable predictions, we could probably
in the capital?
Yeah, we could probably spend the rest of the day talking about it, but let me move ahead. These are some of the things I might say are important community impacts. Linking these ports, the linkage of those ports is good for both ports. Bulk commodities migrating to the Port McKenzie side, the container lift staying on the Anchorage side because they're buying new cranes. And that looks like a great trade-off, bulk commodities being one place, container packaged goods the other place. The infrastructure to meet that population growth, we've talked about how, what are we going to do with the people? Do we put them in the same 40-mile-long corridor, or do we open up some new areas? The emergency access and egress, the commuter convenience. I frequently give talks, and I talk about the situation 20 years from now, somebody living in a Port McKenzie area gets home and forgets it's their anniversary and they need to run back down to Nordstrom's to buy their spouse a present. And if they're only 12 miles away, they're going to come back downtown and buy that gift and get it back home in time. But if they've got to drive 40, 50, or 60 miles one way to get back to town, they're not going to do that. So we think that there's an attractiveness to the commute, which keeps it no longer, no farther than the South Anchorage Hillside is today. Pollution, air pollution specifically, we're talking about vehicle emissions, spreading this out. I know the number of purists will say that dilution is not a solution. But when you spread out your emissions over a greater area, you really have reduced the adverse impacts on small populations. So that could help. And by moving across the way, we get rid of this ever pressure of land churning up green belts on both sides, and that's not desirable at all. The borough told me they had about 600 miles of recreational trails on Point McKenzie, and I'm going to repeat that because they told it to me. But I know when I'm talking to the snow machine people in Anchorage, they are very excited about having a quick and easy access to the recreational system of the Mat-Su Borough.
And I think that connects into almost 2,000 miles.
Wow. Can I use that number?
Certainly.
Okay, that's good.
Who cares if it's right?
You know, just the other day we saw this headline. This is out of the Daily News. It's Associated Press, and it says, fastest growing counties are rural and suburban people. Mat-Su Borough ranks 31st nationally, adding 3,800 residents or 5.3% of their population from July of 2004 to July 2005, this poll taken just before the big Hurricane Katrina and Rita. So this says that, you know, for some, commuting is a long distance, but when you have the long distance to deal with the new population centers, some other good things happen in the way of new businesses. And that's what I wanted to show you here. This is an analysis done for us by Northern Economics, Pat Burden's company in Anchorage. They've looked nationally, and they say to the business sectors, if you own a gas station, how big a population do you have to be profitable? And across the nation, they say about 3,800. If you want to start a grocery store, how big a population do you have to have a hope of being profitable? About 7,000. And you can look down the chart. You get down to department stores. The small department store would have to have about 37,000, 38,000. Consumer lending, like a mortgage service center, perhaps, or maybe just a small bank that lends consumer loans, you got to have about 45,000. You can see the impact. Remember that slide that said we're going to add about 70,000 people to Mat-Su, 73,000 next 20 years? Well, you draw a line across this chart, 73,000 new people, and in the Mat-Su, you're going to see the opportunity for many, many new businesses. And I just want to take a minute to throw this on the screen because you're all interested in economic development, and I think the thresholds will be easily met many times over for some of these businesses. Mr. Chairman?
Exactly. Here we have a city of almost 300,000 on one side and a couple miles across the other side of this inlet. You know, we have a couple thousand people and that tens of thousands of acres to expand in.
Let's talk about bridge cost and financing. First of all, we're looking at a financing package of $600 million. We're in the governor's budget for $94 million of federal dollars, backed up by the small state match. Round numbers, it gives us $100 million against a $600 million project. And how do we close that gap? Well, first of all, we think this 600 number is a pretty good number, and I won't dwell on the details of this chart, but we've just recently, last 3 months ago, updated this by function, the Mat-Su side, the bridge itself, the port work, behind the port work, and the tunnels. And we looked at as-spent dollars, which average about 2008. So if you go to the far right-hand column, you can see that the total project cost is still just under $600 million, as close as you want to guess in this day and age. So with that, we think we can complete our permitting, develop our financing plan in this year of 2006, have a package together to do some work in 2007, and construct in 7, 8, 9, and 10, 4 years, and be open for business at the end of 2010. Again, $100 million in public money, most of that being federal, $94 million federal, and $500 million of private sector investment, which will be paid back by the tolls somewhere between $3 and $7.50. We'll let the financial markets tell us what they'd have to have. But that's the reality. We think we can do it. Mr. Springer chaired a symposium in January. We brought in a number of people that looked at this project. People, I mean bankers, investment counselors, federal highway officials, state people. and contractors, and they took a look at this project from the inside out, and they said with $100 million down payment, they can find a $500 million mortgage, and we can build this. So if there are questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, Mayor Wirtz, you know, I'm astounded at the fact that when I try and envision the economic development that's going to grow around this project, the jobs, the expansion, you know, freedom of Anchorage to try and expand a little bit, could you, you know, it's a 1-to-5 again with federal money. I think it's a good deal myself, but could you talk a little bit how that financing might ultimately facilitate other transportation projects, infrastructure projects? You mentioned more water routes and stuff. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Let me talk about federal funds for transportation. Alaska, in this last TLU bill, thanks to our congressional leadership, will get about $2.5 billion over the 5 years of the transportation bill. $2.5 billion. That's more money than we've ever had in any transportation bill ever before. And of course, you all have watched and observed the flap over earmarks versus non-earmarks. So I'm just disregarding the whole earmark discussion. $2.5 billion. If the legislature approves the bill we have before you now, House Bill 471, Senate Bill 303, we're asking for word changes in the statute that created the toll authority that will clear up some ambiguities and set our debt ceiling at $500 million. So there is the picture. You've got $2.5 billion in federal money. We're asking for $100 million of that, and then we would, go out and borrow $500 million. So the whole state's transportation infrastructure now, would, as an investment, would go from $2.5 billion to $3 billion with no additional drain on the general fund. So I think we have a lot to offer in the way of the big picture for what's good for Alaska. We have a way to get there without further pressure on
public. Could you clarify a little bit also? There's people I know that have been concerned about the STIP, and I believe that when we had a transportation meeting on this, we had folks from DOT testify that the money that we are getting from the federal government, that has to go towards federally funded state highways. So it couldn't really be used for a lot of the arterial smaller roads anyhow. Could you comment on that?
Thank you, Chairman Newman, and that's right. The money that was at one time earmarked for bridges has been, the earmarks have been removed, but it did not remove the intended purpose, which is for the high priority projects listed by the state, and those are National Highway System, NHS projects. So you can't take the money for the bridges and apply it to patching potholes on the neighborhood street. I'm using a ridiculous comparison here, but they have to fall within the National Highway System category. There are five categories for funding in the state of Alaska. The track program being, I think, the smallest. That's the trails program. Then they go up to the largest, which is NHS, National Highway System. National Highway System includes all the numbered highways in the states, and in Anchorage it includes some of the main arterials that were built before the municipality consolidated, like 5th and 6th Street, C Street, and a few others. They're National Highway System roads. Roads to ports are National Highway System roads. So.
Representative Stoltz?
No, it's thank you, Chairman Newman. And I don't think you're wrong to bring that up as a comparison, because we had a whole room full of pickets here once to use this bridge money and other money for patching existing roads. So it's the rhetoric doesn't often, sometimes doesn't match reality, and you have to spend a lot of time dispelling the myths. There's probably very few projects that I'm certainly that I've ever seen that have this match opportunity of we use federal funds to match private sector funds. Usually we're talking about a 90-10 split. Here's where this is, we're taking the limited federal funds. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll disclose I'm one of the non-voting members on the authority, and I've invested a good part of my life on this project. I appreciate this discussion, the economic economic benefits, and it certainly, for my interior friends, their port is the Port of Anchorage, and this puts it about an hour and a half closer, and it benefits the Fairbanks consumer. So I'm trying to help our friends in the interior, most of all.
Well, I'd like
to comment. We sure appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to comment, too. You mentioned potholes and fixing potholes. Is just being a toll authority, it pays for its own potholes, you know, so that, again, alleviates other funds that would go to fixing roads. So they take care of their own. So I think that's an important part of this project.
That's right. Tolls have to pay for the entire operation and maintenance and debt retirement, and then the profit for anybody that loans us money. That's the interest on their debt. So that all has to be done. And we believe the analysis that we have is it will not only do all that, but will create a reserve for future expansions in adding capacity for future populations. So we think there's a good mechanism here. And I really applaud the legislature for stepping up in 2003 to pass this, the first ever toll statute in the state. This is happening all over the country. In fact, all over the world, they actually have a name for it. They call them 3P projects, or public-private partnerships, PPP, public-private partnerships. Mr. Springer went to a big meeting in Washington, D.C. recently, and the head of highways for the state of Texas got up and made an impassioned statement that the federal highway system is broken and they ought to get out of their state. They'll do it themselves with public-private partnerships. Now, that's the extreme statement on one side, but we're bold enough to say that because we have the population density of Northern Cook Inlet, which is over 50% of the residents of Alaska live within a one-hour drive of this bridge, we think this toll mechanism is the way to go for this project. It doesn't fit every project, but it's a good fit on this project.
Representative Stoltz?
One last thing to the engineers, that if it's all possible, I want this to be built with as much steel and iron on it as possible.
Thank you.
Strong.
Well, I'm just going to make the statement as a committee member, when I look at, you know, the 1 to 5 pass-through money of federal money that we've received in this, the economic development opportunities that expound because of this project, I'm very impressed. Any committee members have any more questions for the Mayor Wirch or Mr. Springer? Okay, with that, I guess we'll call this meeting to an end.
Thank you.